there was guys called exobiologists, which is also a very cool job title.
Anything with exo in front of it, very cool.
Yeah. Exo sales associate.
Exo burger flipper.
Hi, and welcome back to the Idiots Anonymous podcast. We are two Scottish engineers that graduated during COVID. I think that intro statement is getting a bit old now. Let's just not talk about COVID anymore. And this is a show where we take everyday life and make it a bit more complicated than it originally was, granting us the title of idiots. So my name's Ryan, and I'm an idiot.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello there. I'm an idiot because I got this humidifier for my room because I feel like my throat was getting really dry during the night. Like, cool, I'm just going to like humidify my room. And then my girlfriend was like, oh, did you put like essential oils in it just to like make it smell nice? And I was like, no, but that's a great idea. So I have like, you know, those reed diffusers. It's just like the jar of scented oil, and like you put the wooden sticks in it, and
yeah,
it like goes up the sticks. So I was like, oh, that's like scented oil. So I poured some of that in the diffuser and left it on, and it was like so toxic. Like, I had the worst migraine ever. And I'm like, oh my God. I think I'm like giving myself neurological damage from the chemicals that's in this.
Yeah, I think you need to get a specific type.
You do,
that can be like
vaporized.
Yeah, vaporized. That's such a middle class problem.
It's a first world problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, it's still lockdown, so that's like the extent of like the shit that's happening at the moment. So. Yeah.
You haven't been an idiot out in the real world. Well, my name is Ruri and I'm an idiot.
Hello, Ruri.
So I'm an idiot this week because I suggested that we record the first episode back in season two the same day as an Old Firm game. So if you hear fireworks that we can't edit out, I would like to apologize sincerely because all day there's just been noise after noise after noise, especially where I live, fireworks constantly. So yeah, I maybe should have waited a week, but
that's brutal. I don't even think of that.
Oh yeah, all day. It's been horrid.
If you don't know what Old Firm is, it's Rangers versus Celtic in Glasgow.
People get very hyped.
I did hear a couple of weeks ago when Rangers won the league title, there was some like mad stuff going on in the city centre. People trashing the streets, trashing George Square. Mad stuff. The police contracted loads of COVID from dispersing the crowds. And this week, this weekend, I think things have been okay. I don't know what you've experienced in Glasgow, but...
Surprisingly okay, but plenty of fireworks.
Lovely. Nice and festive, eh?
Yeah. Just a little bit of spice to the audio, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, hi, everyone. As I said, welcome back. It's been a wee while, hasn't it, Rue? But it's nice to talk to you again. I think I've given you a bit of space.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like the first time since we finished uni that we haven't talked like for a week. Because usually like every day either just doing this or wasting time. So I was like, oh, I haven't seen Ryan in a whole week.
Yeah. If you follow us on Instagram, you'll know that we took a bit of a break to gather some feedback to try and make some positive changes coming into season two. And if you don't follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Idiots Anonymous Pod, I think. I should know that. Yeah, Idiots Anonymous Pod. Type in Idiots Anonymous, you'll find us. It's like the same logo as that we've got on Spotify. So as I said, you know, we're trying to gather some feedback and we've got some great guest episodes planned coming up. So you'll be able to see some juicy behind the scenes content over there on the Instagram. But yeah, we've taken some stuff on board and we've got some really interesting people coming on the next few weeks. So
very excited.
Yeah, Rudy, how have you been? How's lockdown season three treating you?
There's been a lot of character development this season, I think.
But personally, for you?
Yeah, I've decided I'm not going to waste time on date naps anymore because I was just matching with people and then just not saying anything because I'm like, there's nothing going on for me to mention and I can't even be bothered doing what I normally do and just like messaging random nonsense.
Yeah, because it's like, where can it really go? It's like, by matching with someone and talking to someone, you're sort of just committing to an endless conversation on Tinder. Until you're allowed to see people again. Well, I suppose you can go on walks, can't you? But that's a bit old now.
Yeah, but only if they're in your council area.
Only if they're within pretty close radius.
I've decided I might just focus my efforts on other old work or something instead.
Yeah, maybe work's important.
Yeah, maybe it's just to do some things for me, maybe.
It's a bit difficult though, like when you're in lockdown and obviously your social life and your personal life is taking a proper hit. So everyone seems to be throwing themselves into work, but I found it's quite damaging. Like, see, when the only thing you've got going on is work, it's just a bit, you know, it gets quite old quite fast. Even if you enjoy your work, like, I really enjoy my work, but if something goes wrong at work, like, that's your whole week's mood. That's how you feel. There's nothing to cheer you. It's getting depressing.
That's why we get together, record audio.
Exactly.
And tell people to listen to it.
Yeah, I guess that was the main reason we started this podcast, to have that thing to look forward to and just chatting and sort of create some content. So
yeah,
good to be back. So just to give you a bit of background on this episode, so I came across this BBC article a couple of weeks ago that absolutely blew my mind, basically. And I sent this to Rory. It was talking about points in history where the world could have ended, but it didn't.
Very cheery.
But I mean, obviously we're giving it a lighthearted spin, and there's some really cool concepts and cool stories in here. So I just thought that concept was so mental, because like certain decisions, events and whatnot could literally have taken such a turn for the worse, like across history. And I researched a bit into this sort of view or concept, and I found out there's actually such a thing as existential risk researchers. There's people with that job title. Imagine that was your job title.
Yeah, but you come home and go, honey, there's a 40% chance that we won't make it to tomorrow. Want to have a nice dinner tonight? Maybe meatballs and spaghetti, you know, go out in a good one.
I feel like it would be hard to escape that like existential dread if that's what you're thinking about every day. But they've characterized this looming, like ever-present danger through a nice wee analogy. So imagine picking balls out of a giant urn. I've just realized how weird that sounds.
Yeah, I don't know why it's an urn, but okay.
Imagine a big bowl, like a mixing bowl, and you've got like balls, like bingo balls. And each ball represents a new technology, discovery, or invention. And the vast majority of them are white or grey. And so a white ball would represent a good advance for humanity, like the discovery of soap. That's good. There is nothing bad that can come from soap.
Best part of my life, really. Soap.
Yeah, except unsustainable packaging. That's a horrible thing that's came from soap. And a grey ball represents a mixed blessing. Something like social media, you know, it connects people, but also drives them apart. And inside this bowl, however, there's a handful of black balls. I'm saying this aloud, and it's just, I probably could have phrased it a bit better. And they are super rare, but when you pick one out, you've destroyed humanity. Like, these are the types of discoveries that literally destroy everything. And so this is called the vulnerable world hypothesis. And it sort of talks about that problem of preparing for very rare, very dangerous events in the future. And so this week, we've both brought some stories to tell each other, and you, the listeners, of course. So I've been talking for quite a while, I realise. So what have you got to kick us off, Rue? Do you want to start us?
Yeah, I can do. So, you know, you remember the Cold War, you know, great time where America and Russia...
Oh, yeah, back in the day, I think I was... preconception at that point, but yeah,
just living a good life as a little non-created person. So America and Russia obviously didn't like each other very much, and they were in a constant state of unrest between each other. So they're constantly surveilling each other, always ready to attack if the other attacked, right? Luckily, yeah. Didn't happen. You know, we had a lot of close ones, like Cuban Missile Crisis and stuff. But would you be surprised if I told you there were two big events that almost completely destroyed the entire world because these two couldn't get on?
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest.
So from the American side, at the North American Aerospace Defense Station, so essentially they're in charge of like a lot of missiles and stuff like that, someone noticed that in one of their screens, it read, two incoming missiles, right? Pretty scary. But then when they looked at another screen, it said 220 missiles incoming. So that instantly kind of rung up as, this is a full scale, they're destroying our country if this is true.
Oh my God.
But we're very, very lucky that Jimmy Carter's, who was the president at the time, his security advisor.
Jimmy Carr, the comedian.
Yes, Jimmy Carr, president of the US. His advisor, right, I'm going to butcher it, but Zbigniew Baranensky, he found out it was a false alarm. So he like checked in, didn't lose his head over it. Luckily, no one pushed a big red button. But do you know what caused this false alarm?
No.
A tiny, tiny little chip that cost about less than a quid. So we're talking just like tiny little chip had burnt out. And that tiny little chip almost killed two entire countries and possibly more.
But how? But wait, so, but was there some missiles incoming though?
No.
There was nothing incoming. So what?
Nothing.
Okay.
So I'm guessing it was possibly a little chip that like spits out arsed information. So the little sensor would detect it, then it passed through the wee chip, and the wee chip would turn it into the text on the screen. So like, yeah, this how many. So when that burnt out, I think information was just feeding directly to something that caused those numbers to pop up.
Okay. I see what you mean.
But honestly, just a tiny little microchip used out, and that was it. Almost.
I feel like if I was like a nuclear controls specialist or something, or like surveillance guy, and I saw like 220 incoming missiles, my first reaction would not be to like phone up my friend and be like, here mate, can you just double check if we've got 220 nuclear warheads coming towards the country?
Can you go out on your porch and look up?
I'd be like, no.
Yeah. So that like relied on the operator, the person he phoned, then the advisor, all just to be very calmly calling each other. This was before like the internet. This was 1980.
So you can't check Twitter. You can't go on Twitter and be like, check what's going on.
So Jimmy Carter's like, lol, Russia have launched 220 incoming missiles. And someone goes, that's fake news. Donald Trump would have done that. And we all would have gone, right, okay, bullshit. But back then, you're relying on just like someone being by the phone.
Absolutely, yeah.
So very cool. But the same thing roughly almost happened on the Russian side in 3 years later. So a satellite indicated that the US had launched 5 missiles at Russia.
Yeah.
And it was actually the president this time that went, that's not really right, is it? So it's Stanislav Petrov. So
he, the Petrov incident.
Yeah. Classic Petrov. He was a really cool guy.
Classic Petrov. Absolute ledge.
He kind of had in his head is like, if the US were going to attack, they would use more than 5 missiles. Why would they only use 5? Nonsense. So he went, that's fake. So actually what it was an experiment. They were experimenting themselves with the type of rocket, and the scanners had picked it up as if it was incoming.
Oh.
They were very close in that instance to firing back. So like both times the other thought the other was gonna fight them, and it could have just launched an incredibly devastating attack.
Yeah.
And I just don't think a country should have that power, if I'm completely honest.
Absolutely not, mate. I'm just thinking, like, we were talking about chess earlier on and incoming stupid conversation, but like when someone's coming for your queen in chess, you're like, well, I'm gonna fucking take your queen back, you know? It's like, even though you're dying, you're like, well, I'm gonna take you with me.
Yeah,
it's just mad that someone has the power to just press that button and do that. Yeah, that's some tense times. I would be really interested to speak to someone who maybe grew up in America during that tense period and ask them what it was like going through that, because
I wonder if it's just like a in the back of your mind kind of thing, because I imagine there wasn't really a lot of media coverage as such. There was like, they're going to space, but we should go to space.
Well, yeah, but there was all these tensions, and the moon landing project was like part of that tension. Like the reason they pushed the moon expedition so much in the US is because they wanted to increase public confidence in the government and like public perception. They wanted to increase morale in the country, because like there's this ever-looming threat of nuclear war. And that's during the time where most of the nuclear bunkers got built across the world. We did that episode on Doomsday Preppers.
Mm-hmm.
All those bunkers we were talking about were built during the Cold War, because there was this constant threat like in your head. You're like, oh, I need to prepare for this.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right, actually. I wonder how many... It'd be cool to see like the sales figures of like a construction team that would build those bunkers.
That would have been such a good company to have, yeah.
Yeah, just like a little graph of... Yeah, maybe a couple of people, maybe tons. Yeah, basically no one.
There's actually a huge network of underground nuclear bunkers across the world, but they were all built during that time where the threat of nuclear war was pure, like teetering on the edge. Like, this can really happen. But nowadays, when things are a bit more controlled and that tension has died down, you know, governments spent hundreds of millions of pounds and dollars making these things. So governments auction them off to private companies.
Okay, so I should get stocks in nuclear bunkers.
Exactly. Yeah, skip on GameStop, mate. You need to get in the nuclear stuff. Not the nuclear stuff, the nuclear protection stuff.
Yeah, don't invest in nuclear.
Don't invest in nuclear.
You've been told now.
This is not financial advice. you think that's bad, Rory? Well, here's a banger for you. Tighten your socks and hold on to your seatbelt for this one, because I'm going to talk about another time that the world nearly ended. Do you remember the Manhattan Project? Do you know what that is?
I believe, if I'm thinking of Watchmen, it's when a big blue man was created because he was inside of a nuclear experiment to make Mr. Manhattan, and then he blew up a bit of the Earth. That was a comic book and a movie.
that's quite a mucked up movie.
Yeah. But what was it in real life, Ryan?
In real life, so I'm going to lead you through some notes that I've got here. So I found this unclassified research paper on the website of the Federation of American Scientists, and it was titled Ignition of the Atmosphere with Nuclear Bombs.
Okay.
And so this paper was published in 1945, and that relates to the Manhattan Project. And the Manhattan Project is the code name of the US program that created the first ever nuclear bombs during World War II.
So it was.
Yeah, yeah. So this was a whole big deal. And there's, you know, there's biographies, and there's books, and biographies are books. There's biographies, and there's also normal books.
Yes. In school, I remember learning about fiction and biographies.
About the scientists that were involved in this project, and they sort of recounted afterwards, like, why did I do that? Like, literally, I spent years of my life dedicated to a technology to kill people. And there's so many famous quotes from, like, the first nuclear bomb test.
Mm-hmm.
But it says, you know, this entire thing was the epitome of reaching into that bowl and picking out a ball that I was talking about.
Yeah.
And scientists and officials within the US government at this point stood at a turning point in history that involved a small but potentially disastrous risk. And so before the first atomic weapon test, which was in 1945,
mm-hmm.
scientists at the Manhattan Project performed calculations that pointed to a very worrying possibility. And so they obviously ran all their calculations to find out all the different possible scenarios that would happen when they executed this test. And in one scenario they plotted out, the heat from the nuclear fission explosion would be so great that it could trigger runaway fusion. By runaway, they mean a chain reaction of nuclear energy explosions that would be expelled. It would just propagate through atoms outwards, being expelled into the environment. And in other words, the test might accidentally set the atmosphere on fire and burn away the oceans, destroying most of the life on Earth.
Right. What do you know how likely they thought that was going to be?
So there's a philosopher at Oxford University, this guy called Toby Ord. And so he did the specific time and date of that. This was called the Trinity test. And it was 5:29 in the morning on the 16th of July, 1945. And he denotes that as a turning point for humanity. And so there was a 1 in 2 chance that their calculations were wrong.
1 in 2.
Yeah.
And they still did that.
Yeah.
What? I feel like if there's a 50-50 chance of anything I'm going to do, I usually just get scared and just ignore it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, if I drive down this road, there's a 50-50 chance I might end up in the wrong place. I might just stay home.
Yeah, me too. So I think the mass behind that is a bit flawed, mm-hmm. and that is a bit sensationalist. But I've got this fact where in 1954, the same scientists got a calculation staggeringly wrong in another nuclear test. And instead of an expected 6 megaton explosion, they got a 15 megaton explosion.
Oh.
During that summer, they made 2 major thermonuclear calculations. They got 1 right and 1 wrong. And so to that logic, there was a 50% chance that this podcast would never exist. There's like an alternate timeline that split off in 1945 where the Earth is just a radioactive desert.
Just you and me in this little like shed.
Apocalyptic. Like yeah, in Fallout New Vegas, the Mojave radio.
Yeah, but it's just you and me with like gas masks on. We're like, hello and welcome to the Idiots Anonymous podcast. Life in the Wasteland, episode 9.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously that's not enough data points to say, yes, there was a 1 in 2 chance that this was going to be wrong, but it highlights that how like the probability of getting a thermonuclear calculation right at that point in time before you had such powerful computers and AI and whatnot
mm-hmm.
was difficult. Like it was a bad probability.
Yeah, not good at all.
But they were under so much pressure from the military and from the stakeholders in the project, the investors. Like there's investors in the Manhattan Project that, you know, transcended military and government, like the types of powerful people in the US that are not in the public light, you know?
Oh, like all did all the stuff in the shadows and they weren't really bound by rules and things like that.
Exactly. Like the old money, like guys like Rockefeller, stuff like that. I'm not saying he was involved. I don't even know when he was alive, but that type of caliber.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I love science, but sometimes, you know, you're just like, why? Like, I understand why they did all the tests and stuff because they needed to win the war, all that stuff. I get it. Totally get it. But at the same time, if you're sitting on, you're working on a project and you're going, right, so either we get this right, we kill a large number of people and scare the enemy, or we get it wrong, we kill a bunch of people here and we scare people also. Is there a win on that? Because I would argue neither of them was a win.
Oh, mate, absolutely not. Like, even the fact that they were able to carry out those tests and develop these weapons is just, like, unfathomable. Like, it's just weapons of mass destruction. Just wipe out cities, like the same bombs that were used, you know, to wipe out cities in Japan. Mm. What was the name of that city? Was it Fukushima?
Yeah, and then you got Nagasaki as well.
Nagasaki.
Was the small one? Like, am I right in saying that?
I think it was Nagasaki, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think if they hadn't developed nuclear bomb during that war, do you think they would have still gotten to that point?
Yeah, I think so, because there's various other scientific applications of splitting atoms.
Oh, yeah, energy generation, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think they would have, like, it's a bit naive to assume that when you've got the possibility for, you know, nuclear power stations, you wouldn't think, oh, let's make a weapon out of that. There was always going to be government programs that would do that. But it's just at that point in time, 1945, they had shit technology compared to now.
Whenever they do anything like that, you're just like now you'd be like, oh, that's, yeah, I could do the calculations on my phone.
Oh, yeah, you totally could. Yeah.
Yeah, when they had nowhere near the tech we have now and you just do just like mental stuff with it. Yeah. It kind of reminds me that I am an insignificant idiot because there's no way I'd get anywhere close to any of that.
I don't want to go near that stuff, mate. It's not something it's not something you aspire to be involved in. But anyway, let's move on. Have we got a segment now?
We have a segment because in the little quiz we did, people were like, yeah, we like segments. We're like, right, we'll focus. We'll try and get a segment. We'll try and make them fun, new, interesting. So rather than talk about the, you know, the sad topic kind of negative topic kind of we've got today, let's just chill. It's just two guys having a beer together
in a hot tub 5 feet apart
with one guy just grilling the other person on their knowledge of movies. We're gonna play the fake movie trivia game. So I'm gonna read you some statements from some popular movie franchises. It's your job to tell me what was wrong about the statement I read.
Okay.
And then anyone listening, join in, you know, and then you could maybe on our Instagram or whatever, just tell us how well you did compared to Ryan.
Probably going to be a lot better than me, to be fair.
Yeah, it'll be fine. We're going to start off with a big heavy hitter of films, Infinity War. You've seen that movie.
Ooh, baby. Yes, I have.
In Marvel's Infinity War, the Mad Titan Thanos is attempting to gather all the Infinity Stones to wipe out half the life in the galaxy. These stones include the Space Stone, the Time Stone, the Force Stone, the Power Stone, the Soul Stone, and the Mind Stone.
Okay.
What was wrong?
You've got an extra stone in there.
Oh, it's about the stones, but I don't have an extra one. There's still there's the right amount.
One of the stones is wrong. Mate, this is like way beyond my pay grade. I feel like
this is the easy one.
Mate, I don't memorize all the Infinity Stones.
See if you can guess. I'm gonna give it to you that you knew that there was a stone wrong.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the stones. Obviously, I think you've got the Force Stone is possibly wrong. Yeah, because Force and Power are like similar in terms of words, and I know that Power is a stone for sure. Because it gives you loads of power.
Yeah, you're right. The Force Stone isn't real.
Oh, sick.
I subbed that out for the Reality Stone.
Ah.
Which is the one you can use to like play with reality, essentially.
Oh, mate, I'm class. I know all the Infinity Stones. I knew I would get it. I told you I was good at this.
Cool. We'll jump on to another popular franchise, Harry Potter.
Lovely. I watched all these recently, so if I get this wrong, I'll be raging.
In the second Harry Potter film, Harry and Ron miss the train to Hogwarts and have to get there in Ron's family's flying car. When arriving to Hogwarts, the two have a shifty landing, narrowly avoid the Whomping Willow before the car stops, throws out their bags, and drives away, leaving them to sneak into the school.
That's wrong, because they don't narrowly avoid the Whomping Willow.
Yeah, they
do. It absolutely destroys them. They land in it. It fucking it smashes the car up. And I think during that scene as well, Ron's wand gets snapped in half.
Again. Or is that the first time?
No, that's the first time. Yeah. And the car just gets like pure pissy with them. And
yeah.
It chucks out their bags and drives away into the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah, just hops off on its own. But yeah, you're right. They don't avoid it at all. They land in it, get absolutely done in, and then get kicked out.
I like this. I like these like subtle changes. That's good.
I made these myself. I'm very proud.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll hop on to Star Wars. In The New Hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke meet Han Solo in the cantina. The two ask Han to take them to Alderaan in his ship, the Millennium Falcon, which Han has stolen from Lando Calrissian. When leaving the cantina, the group are confronted by bounty hunter Greedo, but Han shoots him dead and they escape.
Oh my. That all sounded plausible to me.
You got this. Just go for a wild guess. I think that's the way to do it.
So I've got two ideas. The first idea is, I can't remember if Obi-Wan was actually there.
He was. I'll tell you that. He's there.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's when Obi-Wan has already got Luke and they're trying to leave that planet.
Right. Yeah.
When he does these are not the droids you were looking for.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. The second one is, I don't know if they're going to Alderaan. Feel like they're going, I'm trying to remember where they were going. Weren't they going to like the rebel? Weren't they going to Endor? No. That was later on. That's my guess. It's going to be like, nah, it was a different planet.
Nah, they were going to Alderaan.
Oh shit.
Han didn't steal the Millennium Falcon from Lando Calrissian. He won it in a card game.
Oh, that's so subtle.
He won it in a card game because it's in the movie Solo. If you've seen it, it kind of explains it. Because
yeah.
Lando tries to cheat him, but he knows he's going to do it, so he beats him.
Yeah. Oh, that's sneaky, mate. You're a sneaky boy. I thought I was going to get that. I love Star Wars as well.
Right. Last one is Avatar. Not The Last Airbender, but the big blue folk.
Navi.
Okay. In 2009's Avatar, former Marine Jake Sully travels to Pandora, where an empty Navi body, known as an Avatar, is made for him so that he can move freely and interact with the native species. While on the planet, Jake falls in love with Neytiri, and helps the Navi fight against Earth's military who want to mine the planet for unobtainium.
I know this answer. It wasn't made for him, it was made for his brother.
It was. It was made for his twin brother.
Because he has the same genetics and stuff, so he would be able to interface with that avatar. Because he's got the same DNA and stuff.
I still think that it's called unobtainium is the metal. Is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
You can get I was playing Ratchet and Clank recently, and the material you use to like upgrade your weapons and stuff is unobtainium as well. Seems to be quite a common fake material.
Funny name for something that you can totally attain.
We're going to obtain some unobtainium. Where'd that was good, there? Mate. I like that. That's a really good trivia. We should, I think I'm going to use that on you and our guest next week for the segment.
Ooh.
I really enjoyed that.
What'd you get? 3 out of 4?
Yeah.
That's quite good. I'm not going to lie.
75%, that's an A. It's an A.
Yeah. So if you did better than Ryan, you know, let us know. I don't imagine it'd be very hard.
Anyway, I'm gonna tell you about something else, Rory, about the times the world almost ended. And this is a pivoting point where there was a probability of something very bad happening, but it didn't. So in the late 60s, NASA faced a decision that could have basically shaped the fate of all of our species on Earth, not just humans, like every living thing. And so after the Apollo 11 moon landings, the three astronauts were waiting to be picked up inside their capsule, floating in the Pacific Ocean, and they were hot and uncomfortable and sweaty after such a mad journey, obviously flying through the atmosphere, crashing into the water. And NASA officials decided to make things more pleasant for them by skipping all of the quarantine procedures that had been put in place, and they just opened the door. And so they did this even though there was a small possibility of unleashing deadly alien microbes on Earth. And so when humans first made plans to send probes and people up into space, the issue of contamination was like a big, big thing. So like there was the fear of forward contamination, which is, you know, Earth-based life might accidentally hitch a ride into the cosmos and go to the moon and stuff and kill
the possibility. The balance.
Yeah, yeah. And so spacecraft needed to be sterilized and carefully packaged before launch. Because like if microbes from Earth snuck on board, that would confuse any attempts to detect alien life.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And if there were extraterrestrial organisms out there, we might end up inadvertently killing them with Earth-based bacteria or viruses. Like the fate of, you know, the aliens in War of the Worlds. Sorry for the spoiler.
Ooh, yeah.
That's what happens. Yeah. I actually only saw that film for the first time last year. But the second concern was back contamination. And that's the idea that astronauts, rockets, and probes returning to Earth might bring back life that could prove catastrophic, either by outcompeting Earth organisms or something far worse, like consuming all of our oxygen on the planet.
Yeah, that seems like the dumbest oversight.
Yeah, imagine we were so lucky there.
You've done the hard part. You managed to send someone out, do their mission, and come back safely. And you at the last minute go, nah, I'll be fine. We'll wing it. It's fine, just let them out. Like, that's like the definition of like, so close, yet so far, if that had gone poorly.
It's like spending a year in lockdown, and then you open up all the nightclubs at once, and then kill loads of people with COVID. So close, yet so far.
Lovely. I do feel for the astronauts a wee bit. You know how if you've been on a plane for like a couple hours and you know how like they say, oh, don't all stand up at one time?
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you can make it busy and stuff. So you're like sitting in your chair trying to be polite while other people go about and you're like, I don't stand up, my back is going to break.
Yeah, you're like so agitated trying to get out. Yeah.
It must be way worse if you're just like rocketing to Earth, getting shaken to the core. It's roasting hot. Everyone's complaining, you're all tired. I feel for them, but at the same time, why?
I think there's like that balance, isn't there? Because imagine you are literally almost baking alive. Like, you won't be able to survive much longer. You've, you know, in this like basically microwave pod, you're literally you're in an oven, you know? And so they're like, oh no, like for the safety of the astronauts, we need to open the door. But the risk that you pose to the rest of the Earth by doing that, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I wonder how long they would have had to be in there.
Yeah, it was. So here's some other information on it. So basically at the time, the probability of this happening was not high. But at the time, some people thought that the moon was likely to harbor life.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the scenario had to be explored by NASA because the consequences were so severe. It's like when you're doing a risk assessment, things get like a probability rating and a severity rating. And if you multiply those together, you get the overall risk. So even though the probability is low, the severity sends it into the threshold where you have to come up with a mitigation strategy.
Yeah.
And this was all like, there was guys called exobiologists, which is also a very cool job title.
Anything with exo in front of it, very cool.
Yeah. Exo sales associate.
Exo burger flipper.
So these were the guys that put, the guys and gals that put all these measures in place. So basically officials from the US Public Health Service argued for stricter measures than initially planned, twisting the space agency's arm by pointing out that they had the power to basically refuse border entry to contaminated astronauts. Obviously they were crashed in the Pacific Ocean. And after congressional hearings, NASA agreed to install a very, very costly quarantine facility on the ship that was picking them up. And so it was also agreed that the lunar explorers would then spend 3 weeks in isolation before they could hug their families or shake the hand of the president, for example. And then the original protocol said that they should stay inside the aircraft, but, you know, NASA had second thoughts after, you know, concerns about the astronauts' well-being. Mm-hmm. Waiting inside that really hot space. They just decided to open the door and just chuck them on a raft and put them in a helicopter. So they didn't even get on the ship. They just got in a helicopter and went to shore. And they had biocontamination suits. But like as soon as they opened that capsule, the air inside flooded out. And yeah, you could have put those bacteria and stuff into the ocean. Like imagine the possibilities of what that could mean.
I wonder if they've like come up with a filter mesh you could put on the door so the doors can come off, but there's still like a really, really fine mesh so stuff can't get out, but air can kind of pass it in it. Kind of like a mask, but for your ship.
Because
that would kind of make sense. So like something pops off to let air in, but you've got like a really harsh filter between the two. So you can cool, but you're not letting anything out.
No, I don't know. I don't think that would work because any sort of filter that's letting something in has holes big enough to let particles out.
Yeah, I guess it'd have to be if they were small enough to get out. Yeah, I guess.
if it was like airborne, I don't know, spores or something, you know?
Well, I'm not very bright then, am I? Well, you know, space is terrifying. You're right.
Yes, baby.
Anything from space is crazy. So if you thought microbes were scary, listen to this. So have you ever heard of a solar flare?
Yes.
So you've probably seen them in films or people have talked about them. So essentially, it's an intense burst of radiation coming from a release of magnetic energy that comes from the sun. So essentially, like really big kind of like blasts from the sun, and they can cause damage to anything really. And the big thing is that they're electromagnetic, so anything with power can get destroyed, essentially. And we've had two big solar flares that could have really destroyed us, essentially. There was one in 1859, so that's also known as the Carrigan event. It's kind of a big code name. So it was a really, really powerful solar flare that actually did hit Earth.
Oh.
And it was bright enough that places where it was nighttime, they thought the day had started. Like everything lit up when it hit. And it destroyed telecommunication technology across the globe. So towers went down, whole stations got burnt out.
Really?
Yeah. But because it was 1859, there weren't really many of those.
Yeah, there weren't much of the technology that it could destroy.
Essentially. So as much as it did damage the Earth, it didn't really do a lot. If you can imagine now, if a solar flare hit powerful enough that wiped out all of our technology.
Oh my God, man.
Yes. So as like it happened that it could have ended us, but because we were so behind, or not behind, but we're so primitive compared to what we are now, that's what saved us. But there was another solar flare that could have done that to us in 2012.
Okay.
It was as big as the Carrigan event. Like it was a powerful solar flare. But luckily, it missed us. So compared to where we were in like in terms of space, if it happened a week earlier, it would have hit us.
And, oh my God.
In the grand scheme of things, a week isn't that much, but it was close enough there that it hit one of our satellites. They're called stereocraft. So there's two of them, and they're essentially there for like observation. So similar to like the Hubble telescope, but just not as powerful. So there was two of them, but it hit one of them. Like that's how close it was, that it essentially touched our atmosphere. Like tickled it. That's how close it was.
Give it a wee tickle.
If it happened a week earlier, what I just said about us like being wiped out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Totally could have happened. Totally could have happened.
Oh, that's mind blowing, mate. We're all the conspiracy theorists that are chatting about 5G causing COVID, they would be absolutely buzzing because this solar flare would come in and just like wipe out all the 5G technology. They're like, yes. But then they'd be pure disappointed when COVID still exists.
Imagine you sent like a risky text.
And then a solar flare hits. You're like, thank God.
Jesus. I don't have to say it was my cousin. But there's actually scientists who have been interviewed that have like witnessed that said there's a 12% chance that a flare could hit us in the next 10 years. So that's like from 2012. So, you know, it could come. 12% is a reasonable percentage.
That is actually a reason. And also, like, if that percentage is, like, if that carries forward, that would mean that there is a 100% chance that it would hit us in the next 100 years.
Yeah, yeah, if you keep carrying it. Like, solar flares aren't really, like, they're like eruptions. Like, you can guess, roughly, it'll happen around this thing. Because they happen all the time, but it's just, like, in terms of magnitude and direction.
Yeah.
You can go, yeah, I think probably, from what we've seen, it might happen. But in reality, it could happen at any time. You could have one and then another one straight after.
Yeah.
In reality.
Just because of the randomness of the occurrence. So see if there was a solar flare coming about, right? Mm. Does it only fry things if they're switched on?
That's a very good question.
Because I'm imagining a scenario where we are, as a planet, we are plagued by solar flares that come like every year or something. So like every year we have to shut down the grid for like a period of like 2 weeks while a solar flare passes.
Like similar to what are they called? What are the bombs called that are electromagnetic? EMPs.
EMPs, yeah.
Yeah. So does an EMP destroy things that are turned off? I don't know if it does. Can it cause a surge if there's no power? Because the circuit would be closed, wouldn't it? So there would be no path.
I think it depends on what electronics you're talking about.
My thoughts are that if it's turned off, then that's an open circuit. Like there's no path for the electricity to go all the way through. So then you couldn't overload it because it can't complete its circuit.
Well, that would only be... I think you're right for the most part, but there are like complete circuits that, for example, have like an input that the input is just switched off, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So like an open circuit would only be if there is like an actual physical switch there.
Yeah. So I think possibly some things would survive.
My Tamagotchi would survive.
Yeah. Like he'd still be you know, whinging at me to get fed. He's
still going, man. Yeah.
I think, yeah, if one hits us, we're losing a lot of stuff.
That's crazy, man. Have you seen Tribes of Europa on Netflix?
I have not.
You need to watch it. It was like top on recommended Netflix a couple of weeks ago. And it's German. It's a German like sci-fi show. And that's basically what's happened in that. Like, there has been what they call, it was Black December. And it's like an event that basically wiped out all technology on Earth. So it's like sent them back into the primal ages. And there's all these different tribes in different countries in Europe who are fighting for control. And they're trying to figure out essentially what happened. Why did this happen? But a solar flare is like a really good explanation for that.
I wonder how quickly you'd be able to get back to like where we are, because we rely on technology to further technology.
Yeah. So I think that would probably depend on, like, we have backups of the data that we have as a society and as like a scientific community, right? Mm-hmm. And we have those just in the same way that we have like apocalypse bunkers for people. We've got like apocalypse bunkers for plants. Like there's a bunker in Norway that every country in the world sends them seeds of their like national plants, and they hold them there in case there's a catastrophic event so we can repopulate the world with its natural fauna. And I'm assuming there's the same thing for digital things, like sealed away off the grid, like cold storage basically, where it's not connected to anything.
Right. But you would still not be able to, like, you wouldn't be able to make a microchip because you'd have to go back to the point where you can build the tools that allow you to build a microchip.
Right.
So you'd like have to go back to make the things to allow you to make things further. That makes sense. Like there's a point you can go back to where you can start again from, which I don't believe is very at the beginning, but you can't make things unless you develop the technology again to then go back to the point where technology makes technology. If that makes any sense.
It makes sense, but my brain is fried. Almost like I've just been attacked by a solar flare.
we should let everyone's brain maybe just settle now, because I think we've reached time.
Great. Yeah, that's time. Yeah. That's been fun, mate. Thank you so much. That was a good chat. I hope you've enjoyed. As I said, we've got some really cool guests coming up in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. You're going to really enjoy it. We've got a vast range of topics coming up.
Yeah, very excited.
So we'll be posting about stuff on our Insta, and go give us a follow, Idiots Anonymous Pod. And yeah, catch you next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
Bye.